Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and on ABC This Week on Sunday, Defense Secretary Robert Gates said this about how long the United States would keep troops in Iraq.
Well, I don't know what the numbers would be. First of all, it would have to be negotiated with the Iraqis to see what they're prepared to accept.
What they're prepared to accept in terms of the number of American troops staying long-term in Iraq. Now, Gates' wording made it sound like the U.S. has its own reasons for keeping troops in Iraq that go beyond helping Iraq achieve its freedom, because it's based on what they would accept rather than what they need. And this morning, just days later, the question of Iraqi sovereignty looms over a private American security contractor. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki asked the U.S. today to replace the security firm Blackwater after a shooting incident on Sunday in which a reported 20 Iraqi civilians were killed by Blackwater personnel. That's according to the Iraqi government. The company maintains that the shootings were in self-defense. And with us now to talk about not just the case, but also to look inside the hidden world of private military contractors now doing the job of U.S. service people is Jeremy Scahill, an investigative reporter who contributes frequently to The Nation magazine and who happens to have a book published this year called Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army, published by Nation Books. Jeremy Scahill, welcome to WNYC. Hello.
It's good to be with you, Brian.
Let's go back to the beginning of this corporation. Blackwater was founded in 1996. By whom and why?
Well, this was a company that was founded by a man named Eric Prince, who was a former U.S. Navy SEAL. And the SEALs are widely held as the most elite forces within the U.S. military. And Eric Prince's military background is not the only thing that sort of distinguishes him in this world. He comes from a very powerful conservative family that's been deeply involved with radical right-wing evangelical Christian politics. His father was a very successful businessman in the state of Michigan who built up a manufacturing empire. In fact, they invented the now ubiquitous lighted sun visor. So if you're driving around in your car and you pull down your visor and it lights up, that's Eric Prince's family that invented that. And his father, as Eric Prince was growing up, his father used the profits of that company as a cash-generating engine to fuel the rise of some of the premier groups that make up the radical religious right, the Family Research Council, James Dobson's Focus on the Family. In fact, Eric Prince, as a young man, was an early intern at the George H.W. Bush White House, but he complained that it wasn't conservative enough for him. Eric Prince's dream had been to be in the military, and he indeed joined the Navy SEALs, and a number of tragedies struck the family in the mid-1990s. Chief among them was that his father died suddenly of a heart attack, and so Eric Prince left active duty with the SEALs, went back, and helped the family sort through what they were going to do with the estate. He then leaves and heads out to North Carolina with his share of the fortune and buys about 5,000 acres of land near a place called the Great Dismal Swamp and began what at the beginning was Blackwater Lodge and Training, and it was sort of envisioned as a sportsman's paradise, a place where gun enthusiasts could come and fire off their weapons. But also he foresaw what he believed was going to be a radical outsourcing of security and firearms-related training. And so he began a business, the aim of which was to train federal law enforcement and U.S. troops. So it was very different sort of in the beginnings from what the company now does.
1996 was 5 years before 9/11, and at a time of relative peace for the United States and relatively low activity for the military. Why did the company anticipate a demand for outsourcing of military work?
Well, I don't know that they did foresee a demand for the outsourcing of military work as much as they did for supporting the military through training, because the Clinton administration was very much on board with the privatization agenda that began in full force during the George H.W. Bush administration. Really, the moment where Blackwater jumps into this world of military outsourcing is in the immediate aftermath of 9/11. You see, when the Central Intelligence Agency and other intelligence agencies began deploying inside of Afghanistan in the early early stages of U.S. operations there after 9/11, they put out a call to all of their former special operators to try to come up with independent contractors. And so Eric Prince's men at Blackwater were contracted by the CIA on a covert contract, a black contract, to send a small team of former special forces operators inside of Afghanistan, where they were positioned near the Pakistan border. And to my knowledge, that's the first time that we see Blackwater actually crossing the line from being a training company to actually providing soldiers of fortune for hire to the U.S. government.
Do you have a problem with that?
Yeah, I think that there's a number of problems. It's not just myself that has a problem with it. I think increasingly many members of Congress, most notably those on the Oversight and Intelligence Committees, have a problem with using these private sector forces, because we've seen dramatically over the past 6 years of this war on terror almost total lack of oversight for the conduct of these individuals, and they're incredibly expensive. They get paid much more than regular duty soldiers, and as we now see in Iraq, they're not held accountable when they commit crimes, and it has a significant blowback effect on the official U.S. military.
How big is Blackwater's presence in Iraq?
Right, it's interesting. You know, there's about 180,000 private contractors in Iraq, and the vast majority of those are not armed contractors like those that work for Blackwater. They cook food, they drive trucks, they do laundry. Blackwater has approximately 1,000 operatives deployed in Iraq. At least that's what the company says. And the primary function of the Blackwater forces in Iraq is to keep alive the senior officials of the U.S. occupation.
The senior officials. So most of the senior U.S. officials in Iraq are protected by Blackwater troops rather than actual U.S. troops?
Right. I mean, Brian, what's of enormous symbolic importance to what's happening right now is that Blackwater isn't just some company that the Iraqis are trying to kick out. Iraq is essentially saying, we want expelled from our country the men who are guarding Ambassador Ryan Crocker, who protect Condoleezza Rice when she visits, who protect every U.S. congressional delegation when they come into Iraq. They are essentially saying, we want to remove the official mercenary protection force of the U.S. government. This is an enormous problem for the State Department right now.
So why them and not U.S. troops protecting U.S. officials?
Well, there's two reasons. One is the official version, and then one, I think, is the accurate version. The official version is that you have to free up every single soldier to do the actual fighting of the war. And so when it comes to executive protection or force protection, you farm that out to the private sector. And the theory behind it is that that will then allow the military to do the actual fighting of the war. In fact, during the 1991 Gulf War, Dick Cheney, as defense secretary, was a major supporter of expanding the civilian presence in the war zone to cook the food for the troops, to do the laundry, drive trucks, etc., based on that notion that we're going to be able to then maximize the force that comes out of our military.
Is that so bad?
Well, I mean, I think that there has never been a study, first of all, on the cost effectiveness of this, and also there are not effective legal mechanisms in place to hold those private sector forces accountable, as there is with U.S. troops when they commit a crime. I mean, the oversight problem here is tremendous, and I really think it cuts across party lines. I think a lot of traditional conservatives are really outraged at this system. But what we've seen the Bush administration do is now take that logistical support and actually turn it into armed combatants that are hired privately. And that's where some real muddy waters emerge, is because Blackwater's forces have been regularly engaged in firefights with Iraqis. Civilians have been killed over the past 4 years. And Blackwater is just one of 180 mercenary companies operating in Iraq right now. This is a system, Brian, very much out of control.
So did you just give us the official reason for supplementing U.S. troops with Blackwater troops? And you said there was another reason that was the real one?
I think that the official reason is to free up the troops so that
right.
they can do the fighting of the war.
Right.
What I think, though, we've seen clearly happen is that the Bush administration has used these private forces as a backdoor way of doubling the size of the U.S. occupation force in Iraq. It also provides the administration with a great deal of political expediency. The deaths of these contractors go uncounted in the official U.S. death toll, and we know that more than 1,000 contractors have died in Iraq because their families have applied for federal death benefits with the U.S. government.
Are they eligible?
Oh yeah, I mean they're paying out. I mean U.S. taxpayers end up paying death benefits to the families of some eligible contractors. But those 1,000 or so whose families have been approved for these death benefits don't represent the total number of contractors, because the vast majority of contractors working for the U.S. government in Iraq are indeed not American citizens.
Why don't the armed forces just recruit more troops?
Well, I think that there's a number of reasons why the military is struggling in Iraq right now. General David Petraeus himself, as well as Ambassador Ryan Crocker, have said very clearly that without the private sector involvement in the war, the occupation would be untenable. I think a lot of people are disillusioned. They don't support the war. This is a tremendously unpopular war, and so you don't have people rushing to join the military right now. Also, and I think this is actually the central point, this administration failed to build a coalition, a so-called coalition of willing nations, to go into Iraq. And so what they did is they built a coalition of billing corporations. And it raises a lot of questions about the democratic process in this country, because if you're essentially purchasing forces to fight a country's war, what does that say about what should be the most serious task that a government can undertake, the waging of a war?
You said doubling the number of troops. Are you saying there are more than 100,000 privately contracted security officials?
No, I'm saying that they double the size of the occupation personnel. You have about 165 to 175,000 official U.S. troops, and then there's approximately 180,000 private contractors. Now, of those, we don't know how many are engaged in armed security activities, but we believe it could be as high as 70,000, according to sources in the U.S. Intelligence Committee in the House.
Jeremy Scahill is my guest on WNYC. He's an investigative reporter who contributes frequently to The Nation magazine and who has a book published this year called Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. And we're talking about this because of the news story still developing today after that shooting incident on Monday in which, according to the Iraqi government, 20 Iraqi civilians were killed. Nouri al-Maliki, the prime minister of Iraq, now saying he wants the U.S. government to stop doing business with Blackwater and have Blackwater leave the country. And we can take phone calls and comments on our comments page for Jeremy Scahill, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Jeremy, since you follow Blackwater so closely, I'm sure you're following this story closely. What do you know from where you sit here in the United States about this incident now in the news? What is clear to you about what happened involving Blackwater personnel, and what remains murky?
Well, you know, Blackwater has been involved with a number of these incidents, and their narrative is very often sort of the exact same story. We're engaged in defensive operations. We were fired upon. We returned fire. We followed the rules of engagement. We were heroically defending American lives. It's pretty clear that Blackwater's version of events, which is that all of those killed were insurgents that were involved in with an attack on Blackwater, is not true. We've seen footage of the hospitals now with victims talking about it, people who had been shot numerous times, who tell a very similar story to Blackwater contractors simply opening fire and indiscriminately shooting at people. We now hear this incredibly disturbing news that when the firefight began, a woman and an infant were among the dead in a car that Blackwater forces fired on.
Let me jump in for a minute and take their side or play devil's advocate and ask, why would they fire indiscriminately at Iraqi civilians, including women and children? Their version is that they thought the car, or if it was 20 people, it must have been more than one car, but from the version I read, the car that ignored a stop order that their personnel gave was acting like a suicide bomber, first ignoring the stop order and continuing to proceed, and then driving on the wrong side of the road, which is supposed to be another behavioral clue. So are you comfortable saying that they should err on the side of not acting in the face of behavior like that?
Well, I think that what we've seen is a pattern of recklessness on the part of these private contractors when they're defending officials, and this is not a new story. I mean, oftentimes Iraqis are driving; they don't know what the so-called rules of engagement of the private contractors are. They think they're simply driving from point A to point B in their city, and so they veer too close to a Blackwater convoy, and Blackwater decides, well, we perceive a threat, so we're going to open fire. And in this case, according to the Iraqis, they killed a couple and their infant. I think that the major problem here is that this is not at all a defensive operation that Blackwater's engaged in. They're at the vanguard of occupying a country. And when Iraqis are driving their cars on the streets and fail to stop because Blackwater wants them to, and then Blackwater lights them up and kills a child and her parents, I think this is an enormous problem.
We'll continue in a minute with Jeremy Scahill. We're going to take a one-minute break and try to get that beeping off your line. And when we come back, I do want to raise the issue of Iraqi sovereignty around this case that I mentioned at the top of the hour, and we'll start taking some of your many phone calls and online comments Our lines are full. Our website is always open at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Remember, you can sign up for our podcast for free. Every day we podcast one segment of our program. I think today it'll probably be this Blackwater segment. We'll see. And we make it available to you for free download. You can sign up for our podcasts at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We continue with Jeremy Scahill, an investigative reporter who contributes frequently to The Nation magazine and who has a book out this year called Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. And we're looking deep into this company as well as the incident that left 20 Iraqi civilians dead, according to the Iraqi government, and that now has Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki asking for the company to be expelled from the country by the United States government. But Jeremy, I raised the issue of Iraqi sovereignty at the top, and the latest that I have from the wires is that Prime Minister Maliki wants Blackwater out of Iraq, but can he actually make that call?
Well, this I think is going to be the first real test of whether there is any degree of autonomy with the Iraqi government or sovereignty. I mean, I think, as you rightly put it, the fact of the matter is that when the Bush administration sent Paul Bremer into Baghdad, one of the orders that he issued was called Order 17, and basically that granted a sweeping immunity to all private contractors operating in Iraq, and said that the Iraqi justice system was not allowed to go after them or prosecute them. Now, the Iraqis dispute the validity of that right now. They say that the Iraqi courts should have the ability to prosecute any criminal activity committed by private individuals inside of their country.
Here's some of the history of that as I understand it, and tell me if this comports with your understanding, that rule was issued, that exemption from Iraqi law was issued during the time that the Coalition Provisional Authority was in effect. And the Coalition Provisional Authority was an occupying government. I mean, they acknowledge that. Now, supposedly, the transition has been made to Iraqi sovereignty. And so I think there's even a legal question over whether the exemption from Iraqi law even still applies as the United States originally intended it.
Right, and in fact, I heard from a contact in Baghdad this morning that one of the senior officials of the Supreme Court of the country is saying that Blackwater should be prosecuted in Iraqi courts, and that, in fact, the Iraqi legal system should have jurisdiction over this incident that took place on Sunday. So the Iraqis very clearly seem to be saying that Order 17 is not on the books anymore. This is no longer the Coalition Provisional Authority. It also seems like Condoleezza Rice is putting a tremendous amount of pressure on Maliki's government to sort of step back on this issue, and I think she's trying to send a message that the State Department is going to investigate it. But right now, this is what's amazing here, Brian, is that for 4 years this has not been a major story in the Iraqi press itself. Now it's front page stuff. Every Iraqi knows the name Blackwater now.
But you write in the book about how ordinary Iraqis distinguish between private American security forces and actual U.S. troops, and seem to have different attitudes toward them.
Well, I think, though, that many Iraqis, especially in the early stages of the occupation, and it probably held true up until a week ago, believed that these private security contractors were either Israeli intelligence officials from the Mossad, which is a very commonly held belief in Iraq about them because of the garb that they dress in and the way that they drive around the country.
What do they wear?
Well, oftentimes they wear sort of khaki pseudo uniforms. They are not clean shaven, as many soldiers are. They wear wraparound Ray-Ban sunglasses. Some of them have goatees. They're very, very pumped up, tattooed individuals. I mean, it's sort of the essence of a cartoonish Rambo running around Iraq. And and Blackwater has a reputation among other private security companies as being the cowboys of the war zone. And now I think Iraqis are realizing these aren't Israeli intelligence operatives. This is a whole other segment of the occupation that many people didn't necessarily know who they were. Now they very much know who they are.
And you were saying a lot of Iraqis thought they were either Israeli intelligence or what were you going to say?
Or a Central Intelligence Agency, people, CIA people.
Right.
In fact, there's an indication that when the four Blackwater men were ambushed in Fallujah in March of 2004, that the people who attacked them believed that they were actually attacking a CIA convoy and didn't know that they were private security forces.
Let's take a phone call. Nick in Chappaqua, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Nick.
Yes, hello, people. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering about the... A couple things. First of all, you were talking about the rules of engagement, and these private security firms, they're not military personnel, and so I was wondering, you were talking about Iraqi jurisdiction as opposed to American jurisdiction, and I was wondering, why aren't these killings murder? They're not soldiers, they're not in combat, they're a private firm who, shoots people. Why can't they be tried for murder either in America or in Iraq?
Well, they could. There is a law on the books in the United States that would provide for individuals who are private security contractors in Iraq to be tried in U.S. civilian courts. It's a law that was passed in 2000 called the Military Extraterritorial Jurisdiction Act. And basically what that says is that if a contractor working on behalf of the U.S. government commits a crime in a foreign war zone, that the U.S. justice system can bring an indictment against that individual, bring them back to the United States, and try them in federal court in the U.S. That hasn't happened yet in the case of any armed contractors. It has happened twice in the case of non-armed contractors in Iraq, where they have been brought back to the United States and prosecuted, but those were not for any crimes against Iraqis. One is a KBR employee who was alleged to have stabbed a coworker in a kitchen, and the other is a man who pled guilty to possession of child pornography images on his computer at Abu Ghraib. But the caller raises an important question, and in fact, the Iraqis are saying this is criminal activity and have labeled Blackwater actions in the past murder. And so the Iraqis clearly want to prosecute them in the country. But normally, when a contractor is accused of a crime by the Iraqis, what has happened is that the company that employs that individual sneaks them out of the country so that they can avoid prosecution.
But take me back to the sovereignty issue for a minute. If Nouri al-Maliki, as the Prime Minister of Iraq, wants to stand up and say, we no longer want your services here, Blackwater, why doesn't he have the authority to simply do that?
Well, I mean, I personally believe that if it is a sovereign government, Nouri al-Maliki should have the right to say that. And that's really what the big issue here is right now, is that Maliki mistakenly thought he was the prime minister of Iraq, apparently, because the Blackwater men haven't gone anywhere, and he's ordered them out of the country.
Or I guess another way to look at it is, as long as Maliki is welcoming the United States military there, then the United States military has the right to hire its own subcontractors, which is what Blackwater is.
No, that's not accurate. Blackwater is not working for the U.S. military in Iraq. Blackwater has an $800 million contract with the U.S. State Department.
Right. But nevertheless, what's the difference? Is there a functional difference in this case?
There is a functional difference, and there actually is a legal distinction. And one of the loopholes in that law that I cited is that it's written so that it's any forces that are working on behalf of the U.S. military. Blackwater is working on behalf of the U.S. State Department. And so what really the crisis here now for the U.S. is that Maliki has essentially said Ryan Crocker's personal bodyguards need to leave the country immediately.
Richard on Staten Island, you're on WNYC with Jeremy Scahill, author of the book Blackwater. Hello.
Brian, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Scahill, I was fortunate enough to meet you when you had your book signing back in March and your discussion with Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! That was a very engaging discussion. But my question is regarding the book itself. You do state in page 37 that on February 1st, 2000, that Blackwater took a huge leap forward as it landed its first General Services Administration contract. And, of course, that was under the Clinton administration. My question would be, if Hillary Clinton should win in 2008 and if this troop engagement still continues on through the election of 2008, can we expect a scaling back or possibly even an eradication of the Blackwater contract with the federal government at that point?
No, I think that some of the Democrats may try to seize on this incident, and particularly because Blackwater is a very prominent backer of Republican causes and the Bush administration campaign specifically, to try to make this into a partisan issue. But the fact is that Hillary Clinton's husband was very supportive of this same agenda. And while Blackwater definitely has a partisan agenda in terms of the personal politics of the executives of the company, this system is not going anywhere anytime soon. And you rightly point out, it was the Clinton administration that officially gave Blackwater permission to push its goods and services to all agencies of the federal government. There's been tremendous bipartisan support for the privatization of the U.S. war machine over the past 15 years, and certainly the Clintons were at the heart of it for a solid 8 years in the White House.
You mentioned Blackwater's reputation among their peers in Iraq. And today's New York Times says, in the clubby atmosphere of private security firms in Iraq, senior members of rival companies are often reluctant to criticize Blackwater. But among the rank and file of security contractors, Blackwater guards are regularly ridiculed as cowboys who are relentlessly and pointlessly aggressive, carry excessive weaponry, and do not appear to have top-of-the-line training. So do you think all those things distinguish Blackwater even from other private security contractors in Iraq who you don't, you know, like the whole category of?
Well, look, I mean, the fact is that I think that description fits a lot of the companies that are operating in Iraq, and it's no surprise that people working for a competitor of Blackwater would want to characterize them in that way. But also, I mean, I an interesting experience I've had, Brian, over the past several months is traveling around the country. I did about 35 cities, and I met many, many U.S. soldiers who had just come back from Iraq, and they are so disgusted with the conduct of Blackwater, and they told me stories about how these Blackwater operatives make their lives incredibly difficult in Iraq because they go into a village, they shoot at cars that come too close to them, and the U.S. soldiers had been working on trying to create good relations with the Iraqis there. The Iraqis don't understand who these individuals are, and then they carry out revenge attacks against official U.S. soldiers. And so I think it also creates a morale problem among the official U.S. troops because the troops are getting paid significantly less than these guys. They see them running around acting like cowboys or rock stars, as one soldier told me, and nothing happens to them when they commit a crime. And there have been 64 courts martial of U.S. soldiers in Iraq on murder-related charges alone, not a single charge brought against any mercenary.
Jim in Union City, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. Actually, my comment was in line with the last remark. I remember right after the Fallujah incident that there was a Marine lieutenant colonel or colonel saying that he deliberately did not want a display of force. He had they had apparently encircled the area, but just tactically wanted to not have a showdown and wanted to just placate the local chiefs, and that these guys went in there arrogantly maneuvering and just making the tactical now strategic mess that that has ensued. But I also would just like to ask the guest the role of Aegis, the British firm, and what sway we would have regarding those contractors and who they're beholden to.
Well, Aegis, I'm glad that you bring that up, because while I call Blackwater the world's most powerful mercenary army, it's by no means the biggest mercenary force operating in the world. It simply has the closest proximity to the throne or the administration in the United States. Aegis is a massive firm set up by an infamous British mercenary named Tim Spicer, and they have what's called the Motherlode contract in Iraq. They essentially run a privatized green zone within the green zone where they coordinate the activities of all of the other mercenary companies, and they also engage in private intelligence services. There's another British company that's very active in Iraq called Armor Group, which has operations in 38 countries around the world. And what we've really seen happen out of the Iraq war is the explosion of the private security industry to the point where you now have some companies operating in the world that have the firepower to take out some small national militaries.
Right. But just the Petraeus, would this be actually beneficial to him? That's what I had told the screener, that this is sort of a blessing in disguise, or if indeed perhaps he didn't orchestrated as seeing it necessary for
Petraeus himself has talked glowingly of the contractors, and in fact General Petraeus himself has been guarded at times by contracted security. Right now in Iraq, three U.S. generals are being protected by private security.
You know that, and Jim, thanks for your call, that Times article I mentioned today also says Blackwater does not have a license to operate in Iraq, unlike other security firms. I haven't seen that elsewhere, but apparently Blackwater's license expired, and they say there have been bureaucratic hurdles because the
right.
government hasn't been up and functioning very well, but other security firms have been able to get their licenses renewed. And according to the Times, Blackwater is particularly unpopular among Iraqi officials even before this incident. Do you know anything about its licensure status?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I'm glad that the Times finally reported this. That was a story that the Washington Post broke a couple of months ago. Steve Faneroo, who's an excellent foreign correspondent for the Washington Post, has really been digging into this world of private military and intelligence in Iraq. Blackwater, over the last 8 or 9 months, has been involved with a number of incidents that have created serious tensions between Washington and Baghdad. The first happened on Christmas Eve inside of the Green Zone, where an off-duty Blackwater contractor was allegedly drunk and shot and killed the bodyguard for the Shiite vice president of Iraq, Adel Abdel Mahdi. The Iraqis have called that a murder, and they told Condoleezza Rice that they were trying to keep it under wraps, because if Iraqis found out that a bodyguard for the vice president was murdered and that the company who he worked for whisked him out of Iraq so that he could avoid prosecution by the Iraqis, that they would be outraged. Then we have this past May, back-to-back days over a 48-hour period, Blackwater operatives engaging in a firefight in the streets of Baghdad outside of the Interior Ministry that actually drew in U.S. and Iraqi forces in a gun battle. A civilian driver was alleged to have been killed in that incident as well. Then you have this incident that happened this past Sunday, where as many as 20 people may have been killed. And I think that the Iraqi government now is saying that there have been at least 7 deadly incidents involving Blackwater killing civilians during the company's presence in Iraq. It does seem now that they are specifically targeting Blackwater. And I'm actually surprised at how forceful the Iraqi government is being on this issue right now. I really had a sense that they were going to have to back down after that initial phone call from Condoleezza Rice, but that does not seem to be the case.
We have 2 minutes left, and then we're going to talk about the taser incident at the University of Florida, the tasering of a student during a John Kerry forum there. But Jeremy Scahill, before you go, here's a very practical series of questions from a listener posting on our website. He asked, do we know how much Blackwater is being paid? And if a Blackwater employee is paid $650 or more per day, then what is our daily payment to Blackwater?
Right. Well, Blackwater's contract in Iraq to date has won the company about $800 million. It began with an initial $27 million no-bid contract to guard Paul Bremer in 2003, and it's been renewed a number of times and expanded, so nearing $1 billion at this point just for its services, so-called, in Iraq.
Let me throw in one follow-up. What are Blackwater personnel paid relative to U.S. troops doing similar work?
Well, if you're a top-tier Blackwater operator, meaning that you have a background in special operations, you can get, as the writer points out, $650 a day. At times, private military contractors in Iraq, the rate has been $1,000 or more. At present, it's about $650, according to Blackwater. If you're a former Colombian soldier hired by Blackwater to work in Iraq, you were told you'd be paid $34 a day. U.S. troops in Iraq right now can make anywhere from $35,000 to $45,000 with additional bonuses a year if you're a rank-and-file soldier. If you go up into the Special Forces ranks, you can get closer to the 70,000 ballpark. So clearly these guys are getting paid a lot more than every level of the U.S. military.
Well, we will see what happens with this situation. Jeremy Scahill is the author of Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army, published by Nation Books. Thank you for coming on with us.
My pleasure, Brian.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC coming up next. We'll play some audio from that student who took the microphone and wouldn't let it go at a John Kerry forum and then wound up being shot by a taser by campus police at the University of Florida. And we'll talk about the incident that's getting so much attention. Stay with us.